with Michael Pennington as Professor James Moriarty, Frederick Treves as Colonel Moran, Sean Arnold as Inspector Patterson, Anne Windsor as Mrs. Collier, Jane Whittenshaw as Jenny, Dr. Watson's maid, Terence Edmund as Peter Steiler, Richard Pierce as Lockwood, Alan Barker as Walmsley, and Norman Jones as Sir George. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The final problem was dramatized for radio by Bert Cools and directed by Enid Williams.
Oh, no! Holmes!
Doctor, will you?
We have arrived too late. There is no pulse.
So, gentlemen, you have attained your end.
The Missing Three-Quarter by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Peter Jeffrey as Dr. Leslie Armstrong. The Missing Three-Quarter.
Holmes. Holmes.
I do believe you've been staring at that these 20 minutes.
16 1/2 minutes. Strand postmark here. Dispatched at 9:12.
Please await me. Terrible misfortune. Right wing. Three-quarter missing. Indispensable tomorrow. Overton.
Yes, Mr. Overton was evidently considerably excited when he sent it.
Yes, that would account for the rather incoherent nature of the message, I suppose.
Yes, well, its sender will be here shortly, I dare say, and then all will doubtless be explained.
Holmes, am I to take it you're puzzled by this telegram?
Yes, I should value your opinion, Watson, as always. Even the most insignificant problem is welcome in these stagnant days.
It is true that things have been very slow with us.
Yes, well, I daily expect the appearance of a new and baffling case, hence the Times, Watson, which I would be grateful that you should let me read.
You know I dread these periods of inactivity, Holmes.
My syringe lies empty and undisturbed in its case, Doctor, for which release I thank you once again. Now.
It is about pigeons.
What?
Or, more properly, a pigeon. The telegram.
You amaze me.
Right wing, three-quarter missing. A bird of some kind, clearly.
But how a pigeon?
Oh, it's not really so very complicated, Holmes. I took particular account of the telegram's strand postmark and of the fact that the missing wing is indispensable tomorrow, Saturday. Now, the strand leads to Charing Cross Station. The South Eastern Railway, I believe, runs trains with special provision for the release of racing pigeons. And if you will lend me the Times an instant... Yes, there is just such a competition tomorrow.
My dear Watson.
Mr. Overton is the trainer of a champion racing pigeon, and some rival has attempted to cheat him of tomorrow's prize by clipping the right wing of his best competitor.
I am full of admiration.
They are but your own methods, Holmes.
Ah, well, we shall know all about our pigeon now, I suspect. Yes, a young gentleman in a state of some excitement. Mr. Overton, in all probability, and the possessor of a physique, I am sorry to say, Watson, which suggests a rather more athletic pursuit than bird racing.
Oh, I don't suppose there is a typical shape for a pigeon trainer.
Yes, but 16 stone, or thereabouts, of solid bone and muscle, not to speak of hands, I said, a Smithfield market porter. My dear fellow, he would crush a racing pigeon in an instant.
Oh, Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
And my friend Dr. John Watson.
I've already been down to Scotland Yard about all this, Mr. Holmes, but Inspector Stanley Hopkins advised me to come to you.
Well, Hopkins,
pray,
advice.
Sit down.
It's
tell
awful,
us.
Gentlemen, quite awful. I wonder my hair isn't grey with it. Godfrey Staunton's simply the linchpin of the whole team. I'd willingly lose two from the pack rather than Godfrey from the three-quarter line. Willingly. Passing, tackling, ruck, maul, nobody to touch him. And then he's got the head, you see, as well. He can hold us all together. What am I to do? That's what I ask you, Mr. Holmes.
Well, Well,
of course I have the reserves, but Morehouse is really a half, no judgment. And he can't sprint for nuts. Oh, yes, you'll say. He has a fine place kick.
If I assure
you, the Oxford Flyers can romp round him. And as for Stevenson, well...
Well?
Well, he's fast enough, but a three-quarter who can neither punt nor drop isn't worth a place just because he can run, is he?
Well, no.
Done, Mr. Holmes, done. Unless you can help me to find Godfrey Staunton.
Watson, pass me letter S, will you?
Certainly.
Oh, boy, thank you. Staunton. Staunton, Staunton. Arthur H., the rising young forger. Yes. Harry Staunton, deceased. I helped to hang him. Godfrey Staunton, a new name to me.
But, Mr. Holmes, I thought you knew such things.
No man can know everything, Mr. Overton.
Indeed. I, for instance, am wholly ignorant of pigeon raising.
I honestly didn't think there was a soul in England who didn't know Godfrey Staunton, the finest wing three-quarter of his generation.
Wing three-quarter?
Yes.
Cambridge, Blackheath, and five rugby football internationals. Really, no?
Not in the least.
Good Lord, Mr. Holmes, where have you lived? And I suppose if you've never heard of Godfrey, you can have no idea of Cyril Overton.
Yes, well, amateur sport is a wholly different world to mine, Mr. Overton. Sweeter, healthier, but even there, it seems, there is work for me. Now, my dear sir, I beg you to sit down and tell us slowly and quietly what exactly has occurred.
It's this way, Mr. Holmes. I'm skipper of the Cambridge Varsity Rugger team, and tomorrow we play Oxford.
Ah, an important event.
Indeed it is, sir. Now, I think I said Staunton is my best man.
I believe you did, yes.
Well, yesterday the whole team came up to London. We settled at Bentley's private hotel.
Just off the Strand.
That's right. At 10 o'clock last night, I went round to see that all the fellows had gone to roost.
Godfrey?
Is that you, Skipper?
Yes, it's me.
The door's open, you know. What is it you want, Cyril?
Oh, you know, just seeing that the team are all... Good heavens, Godfrey, are you feeling all right?
Quite. Yes, quite all right. A headache, that's all. Nothing a good night's sleep won't put right.
You're white as a ghost, old man.
Oh, am I? Well, perhaps I'd best turn in, then.
That's it. Plenty of sleep to keep a team fit. You will be fit, won't you?
Oh, yes. Right as a trivet in the morning, Skipper. Count on me.
And that's the problem, Mr. Holmes. We all do count on Godfrey. And this morning his room was empty. His bed had never been slept in, and his things were all left just as I'd seen them yesterday evening.
And you have had no word from him?
Not a thing. I don't believe he ever will come back.
Why do you say that, Mr. Overton?
It's difficult to explain. Godfrey was a sportsman. Right down to his marrow, a sportsman. He wouldn't have stopped his training, let down his team and his skipper, unless for some cause that was stronger to him even than the game.
So what have you done?
Well, I wired to Cambridge. There was a late train last night.
But he did not take it.
No one has seen him at any rate.
And then you went to Scotland Yard?
I wired first to Lord Mount James.
Why so?
Godfrey is an orphan, and the old boy is his nearest relative, his uncle, I believe.
One of the richest men in England.
Why, yes. Godfrey is his heir, in fact. The old boy is nearly 80, cram full of gout, too. They say he could chalk his billiard cue with his knuckles.
An advanced case indeed.
Yes, this throws new light upon the matter. Do you believe your friend's agitation last night could perhaps have been to do with money?
I really couldn't say, Mr. Holmes. Even if it was, he wouldn't have had much chance of getting it from his uncle. The old man has never allowed Godfrey a shilling in his life. I hear he is an absolute miser.
Do you think Mr. Staunton might have gone to Lord Mount James?
I haven't had any reply from the old boy. But Godfrey isn't fond of his uncle. He would certainly not go if he could help it.
Excellent. Well, it happens I have a clear day. I shall be happy to look into the matter.
Will you wish to step round to the hotel?
In good time, Mr. Roberton. First, please tell me if anyone observed Mr. Staunton after you left him last night.
Well, he was what you'd call a rough-looking chap, sir.
Not a gentleman, then.
But nor yet a working man, neither.
A Londoner?
Yes, sir.
How old would you say he was?
Oh, 50 or thereabouts, give or take a few years. Had a beard, sort of grizzled beard, quietly dressed.
Do you know of such a man among your friend's acquaintance, Mr. Roberton?
I should say not.
Came up to my cubbyhole and asked for Mr. Staunton.
By name?
Yes, sir. He said he had a note for him. Well, in case the young gentleman had turned in for the night, I took it straight up to his room.
Come in.
Beg pardon for disturbing you, Mr. Staunton. This note has been brought for you, sir.
Oh, merciful heaven, no.
It's a chair, sir. Here, sit down, sir. Glass of water. Would you like me to go and fetch Mr. Overton to you, sir?
No, no, Porter. I'm quite all right now, you know. I should be most unhappy to have the skipper disturbed for this. It is really nothing.
Well, as you wish, sir.
The man who brought this note, he is still in the hotel.
In the entrance hall, yes, sir. Mr. Staunton? Mr. Staunton, sir?
What is it?
Is everything all right, sir?
Quite, Porter, thank you. Let us go, then.
Then we came to find him in here this morning, and he was still gone, sir.
It's a pity you only overheard the one word. Time is not in our favour.
And what happened to the note?
Oh, Mr. Staunton took that with him, sir.
You didn't see what it said, I suppose?
No, sir.
Did Mr. Staunton receive any other messages yesterday?
There was a telegram, sir, at about 6 o'clock.
And did you see that?
No, sir, I did not.
Did Mr. Staunton send an answer?
Yes, sir, he wrote it.
Yes, and did you see what he wrote?
No, sir, I didn't see that either. He wrote it over there with his back to me, and when he finished it, he said, "All right, Porter, I'll take this myself."
What did he write it with?
A pen, sir.
It's a pity. He used one of these forms.
Top one, sir.
But what does it matter what Godfrey wrote with?
A pencil would have left an impression of his message in the paper beneath.
A fact which has dissolved many a happy marriage, Mr. Overton. However, a pen will very often... Yes, here we are, upon the blotting pad.
Turn it to the glass, Mr. Holmes.
Yeah, quite unnecessary. The paper's so thin, we have but to reverse it so...
Stand by us, for God's sake.
Yes, just the end of his message. Yet even that indicates that the young man foresaw a considerable danger.
Stand by us. Another person is involved.
Or more than one other, sir.
Well, it must refer to the team, then. We shall need someone to stand by us. Without Godfrey, we're certain to be lost.
I believe Mr. Staunton had cares more pressing even than a football match, Mr. Overton.
Surely this other person is most likely to be the bearded man, Holmes.
And you remember, he was nervous himself, sir.
Then what is the connection between Godfrey Staunton and the bearded man? And what is the third source from which they so desperately sought help?
Well, as to that, we've only to find out to whom the telegram was addressed.
Yes, exactly, Watson, exactly. Letters, bills, notebooks, there's nothing here. By the way, Mr. Overton.
Yes?
I suppose your friend was a healthy young man, nothing amiss with him.
Rather not. Sound as a bell, old Godfrey.
Never known him at all?
Never. He's been laid up with a hack, as have we all from time to time, and he once slipped a kneecap.
Dear me.
No, but that was nothing, Doctor, I assure you.
He may perhaps not have been as strong as you suppose.
Some secret trouble, you mean? No, he should certainly have let his skipper know. Besides, Mr. Holmes, you've never seen Godfrey play.
Well, with your assent, I will put one or two of these papers in my pocket in case they should bear upon the inquiry.
Who are you, sir? And by what right do you presume to trifle with a gentleman's private papers?
I am a private detective.
Oh, you are, are you? And who instructed you?
I did, sir. To explain the disappearance of my friend, Mr. Staunton.
And who are you, sir?
I am Cyril Overton.
Ah, then it is you who sent me a telegram.
You are Lord Mount James?
I have come as quickly as the Bayswater omnibus would bring me. So, you have hired a detective? And all these hangers-on with him, have you?
If you'll excuse me, gentlemen. I have my duties to attend to.
This gentleman is Mr. Holmes's colleague.
Dr. John Watson.
And are you prepared to meet the cost of this inquiry?
My friend Godfrey, if he is found, will be...
And if he's never found, eh?
Well, in that case, his family would...
Nothing of the sort, sir! Don't you look to me for a penny! I may be all the family that young man has got, but I tell you, sir, and you, Mr. Detective, that I will not be responsible. No, sir!
I quite understand your position, sir, but I must advise you that if your nephew, poor man that he is, has been kidnapped, as I suspect...
Kidnapped? Not... Ridiculous! No criminal in his senses would raise Godfrey any sort of a prize. Oh, he's big enough and old enough to look after himself. And I absolutely refuse to waste good money with hunting for
you
him.
You are entirely right, sir. Godfrey Staunton could not have been kidnapped for anything which he himself possesses. But the fame of your wealth has gone abroad, Lord Mount James. An enterprising gang might have secured your nephew in order to gain from him some information.
Information?
As to your house, your habits.
your treasure.
I find it very difficult, sir, to credit so fantastic a scheme. So base a criminality.
Such at the time, sir, I'm afraid.
No. Godfrey, he's a fine lad. Staunch lad. Nothing could induce him to give... Good God. To give his uncle away.
I, for one, would trust Godfrey with my life, sir.
I'll have the plate moved to the bank this evening. Yes, this very evening. In the meantime, I beg you to spare no pains, Mr. Detective. Leave no stone unturned to bring Godfrey safely back.
We shall find him, sir. Never fear.
And before the match, if possible, please, Heaven.
Now, as to money. Well, so far as a fiver goes, you can always look to me, sir. Or even a tenner. Yes, even a tenner.
I was a fool, Watson. I should have taken it. Mm.
The old miser is unlikely to make another such offer, even after we have found his excellent Godfrey.
To which purpose our only clue directs us here.
You don't propose to demand a sight of the telegram counterfeit?
Well, I fear there might be some disinclination to oblige me without a warrant. However, let us venture a more oblique approach.
Next, please.
Ah.
Yes, sir.
I'm so sorry to trouble you, miss. I sent a telegram yesterday, and I very much fear that I must have omitted to put my name at the end. You see, I've had no reply, and I really am. I'm most anxious.
What o'clock was it you sent this,
Well,
sir?
It would have been about a little after six.
Ah, and whom was it sent to?
I'd rather that my friend over there were not to know.
Oh, of course, sir. I understand.
Good, yes. Well, the last words in it were, "For God's sake." For God's sake.
Ah, this must be it, sir. Yes, you are right, sir. There is no name.
Oh, dear me, how very stupid of me, to be sure. Of course, that accounts for my getting no answer. Well, yes, well, many thanks, miss. A very good morning to you.
Well?
We progress, Watson. We progress.
Then you saw the telegraph message?
The message, unfortunately, no. The young lady had her hands across most of the counterfoil.
But then what have we gained?
A starting point for our investigation. Cab!
Where are we going now, Holmes?
Cambridge.
Jewel of the Fenland, Watson. A locality in which I've often been particularly favoured. I must one day relate to you the curious history of the black-leaded gargoyle. Hmm.
Do you expect to find Mr. Staunton in Cambridge? But we know he was not a passenger on Thursday night's train.
We know merely that he was not observed.
But why move him from London if he has been kidnapped to give information against Lord Mountjoy?
Now, Watson, that was simply the explanation that struck me as most likely to interest his tight-fisted lordship.
It certainly did that.
Yes, it is but one alternative amongst several. Now, for instance, this incident has occurred on the eve of an important rugby football match. Is that not curious and suggestive?
The Oxford side would kidnap a member of their opponent's team.
The one absolutely essential player.
I refuse to believe it.
Yes, you think sauce for the racing pigeon distasteful to the sporting gentleman?
Holmes, I do.
No, you mistake me, my dear fellow. I merely suggest, from our past experience, that it might be worth someone's while to get at a wing three-quarter. In the same way that the ruffians of the turf attend to a racehorse.
But amateur sport is free from betting.
Oh, come, Watson. A large number of outside wagers are placed among the public. And you could get long odds on Cambridge losing from a man who was ignorant of Staunton's disappearance.
Oh, really?
Then, of course, there is still the possibility of a plot to hold Mr. Staunton for ransom. After all, he is heir to a great property.
But, Holmes, none of these theories take account of the telegram.
Exactly so. Stand by us, for God's sake. Everything turns on Staunton's telegram.
Could it have been a desperate appeal to his own kidnapper?
Well, if that is true, Watson, we are travelling towards the lion's den.
Right, cabbie. Dr. Leslie Armstrong's residence on the Newmarket Road.
Who is this Dr. Armstrong?
Oh, you've been working with me for too long, Watson. You must have lost touch with your profession to a considerable degree, not to know the name of Leslie Armstrong.
Be that as it may, Holmes, the name is unfamiliar.
Dr. Armstrong is not only one of the heads of the medical school here at Cambridge University, but a thinker of European reputation in more than one branch of science. A man of brilliant record. Formidable mind in every sense.
That is a recommendation indeed.
And he is deeply involved in this affair.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
At your service.
I have heard your name. I am aware of your profession. I do not approve of it.
You are in agreement with every criminal in the country, then?
I had no prior knowledge of your companion, though it was but the work of a moment. John H. Watson, Medicinae Doctor, London, 1876.
I have that honour.
The medical schools of that city are not what they were. And Mr. Holmes, for whom education? Well,
I've come to ask you about Mr. Godfrey Staunton.
You have come, sir, to pry into the secrets of private individuals. You have come to waste the time of men who are more busy than yourself. At the moment I am conversing with you, I should be writing a treatise.
I venture the conversation may prove more important. Do you know that tomorrow is the varsity football match?
I have no sympathy with these childish games.
You know that Godfrey Staunton is the most important member of the Cambridge team?
A rugby football match does not at all come within my horizon.
But you know Mr. Staunton, do you not?
He is a good friend of mine.
Then you're aware that he's disappeared?
Ah, indeed.
He left his London hotel last night and has not been heard of.
No doubt he will return.
Do you know where he is?
Certainly not.
You have not seen him since yesterday?
No, I have not.
Is Mr. Staunton a healthy man?
I would say so, absolutely.
Have you ever known him ill?
Never.
Then perhaps you'd care to explain this.
I do not feel there's any reason for me to render an explanation to you, Mr. Holmes.
No? A receipted bill for 13 guineas?
As you say.
Paid last month by Mr. Godfrey Staunton, an impoverished student, to Dr. Leslie Armstrong of Cambridge, his good friend.
You have been raking through Mr. Staunton's private papers, I suppose.
If you prefer a public explanation.
I know nothing about it.
Did you hear from Mr. Staunton while he was in London?
No, I did not.
Dear me, Watson, have I not often remarked upon the slackness of the post office?
Oh, many times.
A most urgent telegram was dispatched yesterday to you, Dr. Armstrong. It was sent from London by Mr. Godfrey Staunton at 6:15 p.m.
I'll trouble you to walk out of my house, sir.
This telegram is undoubtedly associated with Mr. Staunton's disappearance.
You can tell Lord Mount James that I do not wish to have anything to do either with him or with his hired agents.
It really is most culpable that you should not have received so important a telegram. I shall certainly register a complaint on your behalf.
Does that represent a considerable advance along the path of our investigation?
Well, let us take stock, Watson. We are stranded, friendless in this inhospitable town, which we cannot leave without abandoning our case. The recipient of our only vital clue refuses to acknowledge either the telegram or any surprise at Mr. Staunton's disappearance.
And we have been summarily ejected from his house.
Yes, my dear Watson, we have made excellent progress. I have not seen a man more calculated to fill the gap left by the illustrious Professor Moriarty.
And we may hope that Dr. Leslie Armstrong does not see fit to turn his talents in that direction.
Ah, but what an adversary he would make.
I'm astonished that you should hope for a successor to so dangerous a criminal, Holmes. You might as well claim that the public interest is outweighed by the mere thrill of your chase.
No doubt you're right. The little inn across the street now, singularly adapted to our needs, wouldn't you say?
Admirably.
Be a good fellow, engage a front room there, will you, and purchase the necessaries for the night.
And you?
I shall have time to make a few inquiries.
So no matter where we find ourselves, Watson, you always have the knack of ensuring us a good supper. That's excellent, the pie. Might it have been pigeon?
I've often found that you're far more loquacious after a meal than when your stomach is empty.
Ah, the professional interest of the chronicler, eh?
I burn with curiosity to learn of your inquiries, Holmes.
Well, to tell you the truth, Watson.
They've been out 3 hours. Started at, half past six. And only now are they back again.
That would suggest a drive.
10 or 12 miles. Now, yes, with a map. Game.
But the
There must be nearly 50 villages within a radius of 12 miles.
Some farmsteads and isolated cottages in proportion, of which any number could be recipients of Dr. Armstrong's visits. And I'm told he drives out every day, sometimes twice.
That is no unusual thing for a doctor in practice, Holmes.
Yes, but Armstrong does not care for general practice. It distracts him from his literary work. Now, why does a lecturer and consultant make these long journeys, since they must be exceedingly irksome to him? And whom does he visit?
Dr. Armstrong's coachman would be the one to ask.
My dear Watson, can you doubt that it was to him I first applied?
Easy now, girl. Easy, I say.
Excuse me. I said excuse me.
Ooh, have a care! Blast ya!
I do beg your pardon, Mr. Hewitt.
Been put down on by them at the inn, have I, Mr. Detective?
Fine mare, Mr. Hewitt.
Yeah, good enough for the work.
As a man like Dr. Armstrong would need good carriage horses, I dare say, for all the driving out he has to do.
Now, see here.
And a horse would need those dainty feet on some of the country tracks north of the town.
You can keep that old catchpenny's tin, Mr. London Crusher. Easy, girl, easy. Ooh. Now, hook it out of my yard before I set the dog upon you.
Now, Mr. Hewitt, you could have helped me most
possibly. You prying Miltonian! You've been asking for this!
I am no policeman, as
you
well know.
Get out of my yard! Do you hear me? Hook it!
Neither dog nor man much like the look of my stick, however.
Do you think Dr. Armstrong had prompted this action?
Mr. Barclay Hewitt has a deep reserve of innate depravity. Some little connection with the disreputable classes, too, from his language. But I would draw your attention most particularly, Watson, to his appearance.
What about his appearance?
A rough-looking Londoner, 50 or thereabouts, with a grizzled beard.
The man who took Staunton from Bentley's hotel.
The coincidence is striking, is it not? Well, I need hardly say that relations are now somewhat strained between myself and Mr. Hewitt. I repaired to the yard of our own inn and observed the belligerent coachman as he drove the broom round to the door and collected Dr. Armstrong for his daily journey.
Could you not have followed the carriage?
Excellent, Watson. You are scintillating this evening. The idea did cross my mind. I engaged a bicycle from the shop next door and was able to get started before my quarry was quite out of sight.
Splendid.
Unfortunately not.
Hewitt! I say, Hewitt!
Yes, Doctor?
Can you see that damned cyclist still?
I see him, Doctor.
Stop the carriage.
Whoa!
This charade is going to cease. I beg your pardon, sir.
For what, Doctor?
Oh, why, Mr. Holmes. How extraordinary to see you at this hour and so far from the town.
I take the air.
You would find it better in the daytime. I fear the road is becoming narrow, sir. It would greatly distress me if my carriage were to impede the passage of your bicycle. Please, pass and go on ahead.
You are too kind, Doctor.
Not at all, Mr. Holmes. Your servant, sir.
I kept to the main road for a few miles and then halted to see if the carriage passed. There was no sign of it.
It had turned down a side road.
Evidently. Yes, I'd passed several.
You know, we have no particular reason to connect these journeys of Dr. Armstrong's with Godfrey Staunton's disappearance.
But they must be of the greatest importance, or why should he keep so keen a lookout upon anyone who may follow him? He knows where that young man is. To that I'll swear.
It is not coincidence, then?
I shall not be satisfied until I've made the matter clear. And that I propose to do tomorrow.
Sir, I can assure you that you are wasting your time and Lord Mount James's money in dogging my movements. I have, as you discovered last night, a window in the back of my carriage. If you desire a 20-mile ride which will lead you to the spot from which you started, you have only to follow me again. I can assure you that no amount of spying upon me can in any way help Godfrey Staunton,
to whom the best service you can render is to return at once to London. Yours faithfully, Leslie Armstrong.
The doctor is an outspoken,
honest antagonist. See how he glances up at our window as he steps into his broom. Mm-hmm.
Shall I try my luck upon the bicycle this morning?
Yeah, with all respect to your natural acumen, Watson, I do not think you're quite a match for the worthy doctor. Yeah, this country doesn't lend itself to concealment, you know. It's flat and clean as the palm of your hand.
What may we do, then?
Well, I'm afraid I must leave you to your own devices.
Again?
Yes. I intend to make some independent explorations of my own.
Yeah, no doubt I will find some sights to amuse me in the town.
Yes, I'm sure you will. I've wired to Overton to let us know of any fresh London developments.
But he will be too busy, Holmes. It is the day of the varsity match.
And I've informed him that Cambridge will have to be without their crack wing three-quarter. Play up the light blues.
Come on, Cambridge! Take him on forward!
Mr. Overton, will this defeat by Oxford oblige you to reconsider your tactics?
No, sir. We have been bested by a fine team. However, our own style of play has
served
us well.
Is it your opinion, sir, that the unfortunate absence of Godfrey Staunton is wholly to blame?
The want of a crack international such as Godfrey Staunton was certainly felt.
And at every instance of the game, the lack of combination in the three-quarter line and their weakness both in attack and defence more than neutralised the efforts of Cambridge's heavy and hard-working pack.
It's been a blank day for all of us. I have covered some considerable ground, and several villages have each proved disappointing. But we shall change that. Is there a telegram for me?
I opened it. Ask for Pompey from Jeremy Dixon Trinity College. Does Overton never send a straightforward telegram?
Oh, it's clear enough. An answer to my question this morning. I'll just send round a note to Trinity.
Holmes, if Staunton was kidnapped for a betting swindle, there can now be no further reason to detain him. I mean, since the match is lost.
Well, we shall know better tomorrow. Early to bed, Watson, for it will be an eventful day. Fine morning, Watson.
Yeah. Dear heavens, Holmes.
No, my dear fellow. Your concern is most flattering, but there is really no cause for alarm. The syringe is not an instrument of evil, not on this occasion.
And why are you preparing it?
The deed is done, Watson. The syringe is the key which will unlock our mystery.
If you have not been drugging yourself, I hope at least that you have not administered that devilish substance to another.
I advise you to eat a good breakfast. I propose to get upon Dr. Armstrong's trail today, and I will not stop for food or rest until I run him to his burrow.
Ah, in that case, we'd best carry our breakfast with us. The doctor is making an early start.
Let him go.
And what do you have in mind?
He'll be clever if he can go where I cannot follow him.
I must say, you seem unjustifiably confident.
When you finish, I will introduce you to another detective.
Another?
Yes, a very eminent specialist in the work that lies before us.
Oh, a dog.
Not a dog, Watson. Pompey is the prince of the local draghounds. No very great flyer, but a staunch hound on the scent.
He will need to be. Dr. Armstrong is more than an hour on us already.
You have no faith, my dear fellow. I have merely to waft a handkerchief in front of Pompey's sensitive nose and...
Yes! I hope the leash is strong.
Yes, strong enough.
Slow down, sir.
What have you done, Holmes? We must have been dragged 5 miles already.
I had resort to a threadbare and venerable device. Useful upon occasion, however. I walked into Armstrong's yard this morning with my syringe full of aniseed. A draghound will follow that scent from Cambridge to John O'Groats.
Oh. I sincerely hope not.
With a syringe full of aniseed on his rear wheel, our friend Armstrong would have to drive through the cam before he could shake Pompey off his trail. And this will be where the cunning rascal gave me the slip the other night.
Oh, I will catch up with you, Holmes. I have a stone in my boot.
So... we are now in quite the opposite direction to that in which we started.
No wonder your inquiries led to nothing yesterday.
among those northern villages.
Yeah, this detour has been entirely for our benefit, Watson. I would like to know the reason for such elaborate deception.
I fear it is all too plain. Armstrong has Godfrey Staunton prisoner in one of those Fenland cottages.
Hold, Bobby. Hold, wait. You hear it?
Armstrong's broom.
I must have caught up with him. Well done, Pompey.
No, Holmes. He's coming towards us.
And he's on his way home. Quick, Watson, quick. He must not find us here, or we're done. Pompey, come on. The bridge will give us some cover. I do not see Armstrong, Watson.
No. I have a boot full of water.
I spotted him in the carriage. Shoulders bowed, his head sunk on his hands. Watson, he was the very image of distress. Though I fear there's some dark ending to our quest.
Well, cannot be long before we know it.
Come, Pompey.
And so, this is the end of our journey.
Yes. Little doubt of it. Let's see where our friend Hewitt turned the carriage while Armstrong was inside the cottage.
It is a secluded spot, Holmes, and an ideal one for hiding a man.
Well, we wouldn't have found it without Pompey here. Well, stay, Pompey. Good boy, good boy.
There may be nobody inside.
Well, then our efforts will have been all for nothing.
Oh, no, dear God, no!
Dear goodness, Holmes. What on earth was... Armstrong is coming back.
Quick, Watson! Upstairs, as fast as you can.
This door! Oh, no.
Doctor, will you?
We are too late. There is no pulse.
Sir. My dear sir. Are you Mr. Godfrey Staunton?
Yes, Doctor. Yes, I am. You're too late.
There is nothing I can do for her. I'm so sorry.
Mr. Staunton, there are no words that will make such a grief easier to bear. But you have many friends, sir, whose concern for you is the reason...
So, gentlemen, you have attained your end.
She is dead, Armstrong. Your colleagues have arrived too late.
My colleagues?
I think we are a little at cross purposes.
You have chosen a particularly delicate moment for your intrusion.
Had we arrived a little earlier, we might have saved
her. I would not brawl in the presence of death. But if I were a younger man, I can assure you that your monstrous conduct would not pass with impunity.
They have done all they could, Armstrong. You yourself could not
have
saved...
Mr. Staunton.
We have each some light to shed upon this miserable affair, Dr. Armstrong. If you could step downstairs with us.
Do you really think we should leave, Mr. Staunton?
Go. Go. I want only to be with her.
Well, gentlemen?
When a man is lost, Doctor, it is my duty to ascertain his fate.
And doubtless you are to be paid handsomely for it.
I wish you to understand that I am not, as you seem to believe, employed by Lord Mount James.
No?
No, my sympathies in this matter are entirely against that nobleman. We have been seeking Mr. Godfrey Staunton. He is found, and there, as far as I'm concerned, the matter ends.
After all, what is he to you?
He is a young man who has lost his wife.
Of course, his wife.
Just so. It seems you know it all.
Well,
they have been married less than a year. Godfrey met her while he was lodging at her father's house in London. They became passionately attached almost at once.
She is very beautiful.
As she was good, Doctor. And her intelligence, too, was the equal of her beauty. No man need be ashamed of such a wife, and you may tell that to Lord Mountjoy.
I have said, Doctor, we've been instructed by Mr. Staunton's friend and team captain, Mr. Cyril
Overton. Yes, yes, but it is Mountjoy who is the cause of all this. Mountjoy, who would have made an end of Godfrey's inheritance if he knew of this marriage to a lodging housekeeper's daughter?
I can well believe it, of that exceedingly unpleasant old person.
Mr. Holmes, once such a whisper gets about, it is not long before everyone has heard it.
I assure you, I am much more anxious to hush up private scandals than to give them publicity.
I hope so, sir. Godfrey both needs and deserves that. I've known him well. He has many excellent qualities, and I love him for them.
Your conduct has shown us that, Doctor.
I've merely done what I could to help him keep their secret. They chose to live here, far from the town, that their home should not be discovered. It is a disgraceful thing that their honest love should have been forced into hiding from that miser Mountjoy. It is thanks to Godfrey's own discretion, not mine, that we have succeeded until now.
As to discretion, Doctor, you have my word on it.
But there are newspapers, sir.
I'll cooperate in keeping the facts from them.
I thank heaven that I turned my carriage back. Or I should have persisted in my judgment of you, sir. But I could not leave poor Godfrey alone in such a plight. Like you, I was too late.
Mrs. Staunton died just before we came to her.
It was consumption, of the most virulent kind. The poor boy was half crazed with grief when he learned of it. A terrible blow.
There is none more agonizing. I knew it.
This secret marriage, the loneliness of this cottage added to their misfortune. Hewitt and I were the only people who could offer assistance. He's gone now to the village for help.
It will be wasted effort, I'm afraid.
Indeed, Doctor, we have laboured in vain. I would gladly have treated the poor girl without a fee, but Godfrey wouldn't hear of it. He had little money, but he was rich in pride and honesty. Well, his 13 guineas may help with the funeral.
It must have been at the crisis of her illness that Mr. Staunton had to play the varsity match.
Yeah, he could not get out of it, not without explanations which would reveal the secret.
Poor man.
I tried to cheer him up by a telegram.
And he replied to you?
Imploring me to do all I could.
Stand by us, for God's sake.
You've seen it. How, I do not know. Perhaps I should have been more honest. Told Godfrey how urgent the danger really was, but he could have done no good here.
Then who communicated the truth to him? Hewitt?
Hewitt? He's never left Cambridge. He has driven me here every day since the poor girl fell ill. Whatever could give you that idea?
A coincidence. Nothing.
No, I sent the truth to the girl's father. He went to Godfrey at the hotel. And that young man has remained here since Thursday night, kneeling at the end of his wife's bed. Until this morning, when death has put an end to her sufferings.
I speak for us both, Dr. Armstrong. You can rely on our absolute discretion.
You are a good fellow, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Watson?
Dr. Armstrong?
Come, Watson.
The agony, Holmes, on that young man's face.
Yes. Heavens, but after that house of grief, the air is sweet.
Yes. And there is a beautiful young woman who will never breathe it.
In The Missing Three-Quarter, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Peter Jeffrey as Dr. Armstrong. Staunton was played by Matthew Morgan, Overton by Robert Portal, Lord Mountjoy by Peter Howell, the post office clerk by Cyril Jenkins, the porter by Philip Anthony, and Hewitt by Steve Hodson. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Missing Three-Quarter was dramatized for radio by Roger Daines and directed by Patrick Rayner. After
this. Why are bad husbands like bad coal? Bad husbands? Bad coal? That's it, missus. All they do is smoke and go out.
Now there ain't a lady living in our land.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer.
They say I killed a man, so they say. Yes, they say I killed a man, so they say. Oh, I killed a man, it said, and I left him there for dead. Yes, I split his bloody head, God damn his eyes.
The Remarkable Performance of Mr. Frederick Merridew by Bert Cools, with Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Andrew Sachs as Dr. John Watson, and featuring Hugh Bonneville as Merridew. The Remarkable Performance of Mr. Frederick Merridew.
You're going out tonight?
Well, yes, I am, but I don't see how you deduced it.
Well, it's obvious you're looking forward to an evening of entertainment somewhere in the suburbs in the company of a male friend.
And this is obvious?
Oh, it's perfectly. Oh. But exactly which friend proved an interesting puzzle until I recall what happened earlier today. You opened the latest copy of The Lancet, which you'd ignored for almost a week. Your mind had turned to the world of medicine.
I know lots of people from the world of medicine.
Wow. But only one of them could have provoked a nostalgic expression, a look around our humble home, and a final glance at me. Your old colleague from Bart's Hospital. The amiable but vacuous Stamford.
Oh, vacuous is a touch harsh. He did have the good sense to introduce us.
True, but I was probably the only really useful act of his entire life. Oh. I am right.
Yes, you are. Bravo.
An evening out with Stamford, whose tastes run even more to the light and popular than your own. Not the theatre, then, or even the operetta. You, my pleasure-seeking friend, are off to the music hall.
All right, Stamford. No more guessing games. Get quite enough of that at home. Oh, come on, what's so special about this place?
Two things. Firstly, there's an enchanting little dancer in the ballet number.
Oh, not again. Didn't you learn your lesson last time?
Watson, old man, this is different.
Yes, it always is. And secondly?
One of the terms is really something special. Look, we've got half an hour. Let's go round backstage and I'll introduce you to Floribel. You know, you've changed since the old days.
Sometimes I have to remind myself that I ever was a medical student. Seems like a lifetime ago. You haven't changed.
Pleased to hear it.
Get your hands off me!
No, I don't think I shall.
I say, that's Merridew. Chap I was telling you about.
Which one?
The one you wouldn't want to argue with.
You're making a big mistake!
I'm sorry, but you brought it on yourself. When you started, it was flattering.
Flattering?
But enough is enough. George!
Freddy, you can't do this.
Be quiet, Charlotte.
Don't let him go.
For God's sake, man!
Freddy,
get
please.
Get back to the dressing room and wait for me. George.
Mr. Merridew, sir.
This is Mr. Henry Turner. Please don't let him backstage again.
Very good, sir.
Thank you, Turner. In future, keep well away from me and my wife.
This way, sir.
All right. A very big mistake. All right.
Well, well.
Quite.
Not exactly how I saw the evening starting.
So, which one is your Floribel?
There. What do you think?
Charlotte!
Harry. Oh, Harry, I can't take it anymore.
Then come away with me. Now. Right now.
How can I? He'll track me down. He'll find me. You know what he'd do then.
He won't have the chance. Do you think I was bluffing? I'm going to the police. I'm going to tell them what I know.
Oh, and what about me? I'm as guilty as he is.
Only because he forced you.
You think they'll believe that? Are you really willing to take that chance?
Well, then what can we do?
There's nothing. There's nothing at all. Oh, God.
What if we could be rid of him for good?
Harry.
Look at you. Sooner or later, it's going to be more than just bruises. You know that.
Oh, but you can't mean that.
Charlotte, if he'd been caught back then, he'd have hanged. The man deserves to die.
Oh, it's horrible.
My love, it's the only way.
You'd do that?
To save you, I would. Say yes.
No, I can't.
Then you're going to live in pain and misery for the rest of your life. Is that what you want?
Well, of course it's not, but
then say yes.
May God forgive me. Yes.
So, what do you think? Best of the bunch, eh?
Oh, I don't know. Some of the others come close. That redhead and the blue dress.
Ah, that's more like the Watson I used to know. I'll ask Flora to introduce you.
Oh, no, please don't.
Oh, well, your loss, old man. Ah. Here we go.
My name, it is Sam Hall. Sam Hall. Oh, my name, it is Sam Hall. Sam Hall. Oh, my name, it is Sam Hall. And I hate you, one and all. You're a bunch of muckers, all. God damn your eyes. Ah! They say I killed a man. So they say. Yes, they say I killed a man, so they say. Oh, I killed a man, it said. Then I left him there for dead. Yes, I split his bloody head. God damn his eyes. And now dangling on a rope, I must go. Yes, dangling on a rope, I must go. I'll be swinging to and fro while you people down below yell up, Sam, we told you so. God damn your eyes. Yeah. Yeah. My name, it is Sam Hall. Sam Hall. Yes, my name, it is Sam Hall. Sam Hall. My name is Samuel. And I'll see you all in hell. And I'll watch you roast as well. God damn your eyes.
Told you, didn't I?
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah, tell me this. What's the difference between a ruined boot and Joan of Arc? One's made of wood, the other's made of Orleans. Right, tell me this.
Come on, time for a drink.
Bad husbands, bad coal. That's it, missus. All they do is smoke and go out.
You know, I've met murderers. I've looked into the eyes of men who knew they were going to hang. He really has it right. That combination of defiance and despair. Incredible bit of acting.
Ah, but is it just acting?
What on earth do you mean?
Word is he's actually killed someone.
Oh, come on.
Before he went on the halls. That's how he can do it so well. He knows what it really feels like. The rumour's everywhere.
It's just publicity.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Oh, that was a damn good show. Thank you.
Knew you'd enjoy it. Now, where's she hiding?
I wonder how long Merridew's here. I'd like Holmes to catch him.
Sherlock Holmes in a music hall?
No, maybe you're right.
What the devil?
Help! Help me!
Charlotte, what's the matter? Is it Turner?
Freddy, he's got a gun.
Stay here.
No! Freddy! Oh, my lord.
Oh, Mrs. Merridew. It's all right, it's all right. I've got you.
Then why, my dear? Sit yourself down.
Thank you.
What's going on? Who's been murdered? Mrs. Merridew?
George, stay with her. Stamford, come with me.
Where the deuce have they gone?
Stamford, the window's open. What's out there?
It's just an alleyway, I think.
I can't see a thing. It's black as pitch. There could be streets away by now.
God almighty!
How do we get out there? Quickly, man!
Quiet! Pass me one of those lanterns.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Stamford, come with me.
Right.
The rest of you, wait here.
Careful, careful. Ground's like ice.
Rotting. Food and God knows what else.
Look.
Oh, no.
It's Merridew. Here, take the lantern.
Is he dead?
No. No, he's still breathing. There's no blood.
Surely he didn't just faint.
I think he fell and cracked his head on the flagstone. Watch where you're standing.
What's wrong?
Yes. Either that's Turner's gun or Merridew had one too. Mr. Merridew, now don't try to speak.
Is he badly hurt?
Save your strength.
I had to stop him.
What?
He fired at me. Had to stop him. Aimed for his legs. Had to stop him before he fired again. His legs.
Pulse is almost gone. We need help here!
Yes, sir!
Well, get him inside. Raise his feet and keep him warm.
Stamford, give me the light. Come on, stay close. There.
Dear God.
You check Merridew. I'll talk to his wife.
Right.
Oh, where the devil is she? George! Where's Mrs. Merridew?
I must have wandered off, sir.
I told you to stay with her.
Freddy! Where's my husband?
Mrs. Merridew.
Where is he, Freddy?
You shouldn't be wandering about.
What's happened? Something's happened. Someone said there was shooting. Freddy!
Then, Mrs. Merridew, please, stay calm. Your husband hasn't been shot.
He hasn't?
No.
Oh, thank God.
Good evening, sir. Sorry to keep you waiting. Detective Sergeant Fraxon.
Sergeant.
And you are Dr. John H. Watson off Baker Street. May I shake you by the hand?
Oh, certainly.
I'm obliged. Well, bit of a change for you, they say, sir.
Is it?
Nothing bizarre here. Nothing outre. Whole thing's cut and dried.
Oh.
Seems that Turner's one of those pathetic types who latch onto people in the public eye and then get a bit carried away.
Well, that seems rather an understatement.
No. I'm afraid your famous friend won't be gracing this one with his presence. Pity.
A night at the music hall can be more interesting than I realised. Here.
Oh, thank you. Good health.
Health?
Oh, that's good.
Carry on with your reconstruction of events.
Fraxon's reconstruction.
You disagree?
Well, it's reasonable enough on the face of it. Turner lost his nerve.
Possibly when he saw the gun in Merridew's hand.
Yes. Anyway, he escaped through the window the way he got in, and Merridew chased him.
Shots were exchanged, Turner was killed, and then something happened which culminated in Merridew...